Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. Today on the show, we have stories from Ashley Thompson, Christopher Cruz, Bruce Alpert, Anna Mateo, Dan Friedel, and me, Katie Weaver.
Three leaders of Hong Kong's pro-democracy protests in 2014 were sentenced on Monday. All three avoided jail time. A judge sentenced Joshua Wong, 19, to 120 hours of community service. Nathan Law, 23, was ordered to perform 80 hours. The most famous leader of the protests, 19-year-old Alex Chow, was sentenced to 3 weeks in prison. But his sentence was suspended for a year while he attends school in Britain. The three student activists entered a fenced-off area of Hong Kong's government offices in September 2014. They were protesting Chinese government plans to restrict elections in Hong Kong. Police detained the young men and other protesters. The arrests led to a massive demonstration along major Hong Kong streets. The protest shut down much of the territory for 79 days. Judge June Chung said she handed down light sentences because the three men had no previous criminal history. She said the court also felt the activists did not mean to harm anyone else or to help themselves by their actions. The court believes the three defendants are expressing their views and demands genuinely out of their political beliefs or their concern for society. The judge said. Hong Kong, a former British colony, returned to Chinese rule in 1997. The territory has autonomy from China, but the government in Beijing has refused to grant full democracy. Pro-democracy activists have expressed concerns that China is moving to reduce personal freedoms in Hong Kong. The three activists spoke outside court after the sentences were announced. Chow said the protests showed that the people are advocating self-determination or even Hong Kong independence. It is out of their frustration and their hope for a better Hong Kong, a more democratic Hong Kong, a more just Hong Kong, he said. Wong promised to keep pushing for political reforms in Hong Kong. He said by taking part in nonviolent protests, he can show his commitment and persistence to fight for human rights, democracy, and freedom in Hong Kong. I'm Ashley Thompson.
United Nations economic restrictions ordered against North Korea in March have produced mixed results. Prices for goods in North Korea have remained stable, Reports note that business has slowed at the economic development zones. These zones were designed to appeal to foreign investment. Lim L. Chul is a professor of Korean studies at Gyeongnam University in South Korea. He spoke with VOA's Korean service. He said economic activity decreased in two development zones near the Chinese border in the last 5 months. Lim said China had planned to invest in the Mubong Economic Development Zone and the Ansung Island Economic Development Zone. But development in the zones stopped after China took part in the UN sanctions against North Korea. The UN sanctions increased financial restrictions on companies that do business with North Korea. The United States also ordered sanctions against North Korea. They include measures to seize money and property from organizations and individuals involved with North Korean industries. Adam Cathcart is an East Asia expert at Leeds University in Britain. He said that even without sanctions, international companies are reluctant to invest in North Korea's economic development zones. He said the zones do not provide enough infrastructure. China is important to the North Korean economy. Close to 90% of North Korean trade flows either to or through China. Last year, North Korean exports dropped almost 15% before the sanctions were in place. The Bank of Korea says the economic slowdown in China was the main cause of the drop. Other reports suggest that sanctions are having some effect. Observers noted a drop in vehicle traffic at the Chinese and North Korean border. Some money transfers to North Korean banks have been suspended. Officials also have increased inspections of North Korean shipments entering Chinese ports. However, there are also reports that say sanctions have not affected food and fuel prices. News reports from Seoul show that the price of rice, corn, pork, and fuel remained stable over the last year. The reports say the price of gasoline increased by 45% immediately following the announcement of sanctions. But reports say the prices soon returned to normal. Some experts say the growth of private markets under North Korean leader Kim Jong-un kept food and fuel supply prices stable. I'm Katie Weaver.
Shea butter, which is used in makeup and food, is popular around the world. In Africa, it is called women's gold, because so many women there earn money making and selling it. The ivory-colored butter, or karité, comes from the nut of the shea tree. Millions of women across the Sahel earn money from making it. The Sahel is an area of the African continent south of the Sahara Desert. It stretches across northern Africa like a belt, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Red Sea. It is 5,400 kilometers long, and between a few hundred and 1,000 kilometers wide. In northern Ivory Coast, some women are working together to create a large business that makes and sells shea butter. People are selling a lot of shea butter in a local market in Korhogo. Shea butter is popular with people who live in the area, like Awa Watara. She says, "It nourishes my skin. It beautifies it and makes it more firm." About 50 kilometers from the market, Alice Kone Maridiuma sweeps the grass to pick up the fallen shea nuts in one of the many shea fields in the area. The harvest season has begun. Like she does every year, Kone will process the nuts in the traditional way her grandmother taught her. She will heat, dry, and grind the nuts. She will work hard for hours to make the shea butter, which is then sold at the market. She says sometimes she can make a lot of money selling shea butter, but she says when the harvest is not good, she must sell other products. Like Kone, most women in the shea industry in Ivory Coast work independently and sell their product near their homes. But there is great demand for shea butter worldwide. It is used in makeup or as a substitute for cocoa butter in chocolate. Two neighboring countries, Burkina Faso and Ghana, are among the top exporters of shea butter. Burkina Faso earns an estimated $33 million every year exporting it. Ivory Coast is trying to increase the amount of shea butter it exports. In Natio Kobadara, processing shea is a traditional activity that almost all of the families in the village have taken part in for many years. But a few years ago, some of the women created a separate company called a co-op. In an open area, they lay strips of shea kernels to dry under the sun. Nearby, many women operate ovens to heat the shea nuts. A mill grinds the kernels. Ahua Kulibali is the president of the co-op. She says when people work in a group, they create many ideas. And she says such a group may be given money to expand. She says the women have received some money to build a storage building. She says if women work alone, they cannot build such a warehouse. Kulibali says the co-op still needs more machines and a fence to guard the open area. In some fields in the area, a new kind of shea tree is being planted. It produces more nuts than traditional shea trees. 2 years ago, the government began working to help shea butter producers. Ali Keita leads the effort. He says when there is a strong cooperative organization, Ivory Coast will be able to sell shea butter in China, Europe, and the United States. Keita is also trying to convince countries that produce shea butter to work together. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
The world stopped and watched Usain Bolt on Sunday night for less than 10 seconds. But it was more than enough time to see the Jamaican sprinter win his third straight gold medal in the 100-meter dash. It is the first time a runner has won the event at three Olympic Games in a row. Bolt was not the fastest out of the starting blocks, but he crossed the finish line ahead of American Justin Gatlin. He ran the race in 9.81 seconds. Next, Bolt will try to win three gold medals in three straight Olympics in the 200-meter race. First, he must qualify for the final with a good time on Tuesday morning in Rio de Janeiro. The 200-meter final is on Thursday night. Bolt said he will try to break his own 200-meter world record. "I'm going to go out there and leave it all on the track," he said. Bolt dedicated his victory Sunday to the people of Jamaica. Also this weekend, Monica Puig of Puerto Rico won the women's tennis tournament. She defeated German Angelique Kerber. It was the first ever gold medal for Puerto Rico, a territory of the United States. Athletes from the island can choose to represent either the U.S. or Puerto Rico in the Olympic Games. Puerto Rico first sent athletes to the Olympics in 1948. Before the Rio Olympics, it had won 8 Olympic medals, but never gold. Puig was a surprise winner. She was ranked 34th in the world before the tournament. "I couldn't really believe what just happened," Puig said. Two rowers from Ireland won the country's first medal of the 2016 Olympics. Brothers Paul and Gary O'Donovan won the silver medal in the lightweight double sculls rowing event. But they gave an interview on Irish television that some said was worth a gold medal. People around the world enjoyed hearing the Irish accents and listening to the brothers talk about their experience in Rio. The video interview has more than 4 million views. "It's been a bit of a circus since we finished the race," Gary O'Donovan said. "We're just taking it all in and trying to enjoy it the best we can." American actor Mia Farrow wrote on Twitter that the brothers should get the gold medal for best interview. I'm Dan Friedel.
About 2.8 million American children were told at least once during the 2013-2014 school year to leave public school for bad behavior. In the United States, forcing a student to leave school is a punishment known as suspension. It is designed to stop misbehaving students from interfering with classroom activities. But a number of recent studies suggest the punishment does not work. One group, for example, found that suspended students are more likely to be arrested by police or drop out of school. The Council of State Government carried out the study. Another survey found that suspensions in 10th grade alone cost U.S. taxpayers $35 billion for extra prison and social welfare spending. That finding came from researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles. And suspensions may unfairly target African Americans, according to the U.S. Department of Education. It reported in June that African Americans are 3.8 times more likely to receive one or more suspensions as white students. Education officials across the country are debating what to do with students who talk loudly in class, throw things at other students, or arrive late. There is more agreement that a student who physically attacks a fellow student or teacher should be removed. Lynette Stream has three children attending public schools in Oskaloosa, southeastern Iowa. Oskaloosa is home to about 12,000 people. In her daughter's kindergarten class, Stream said, some students arrive late all the time. She said this forces teachers to repeat lessons, taking away teaching time. Some students refuse to sit down in the classroom, choosing instead to walk around and talk. This makes it hard for other students to keep their attention on what the teacher is saying, Stream said. Bad behavior is even more of a problem in middle school, she added. Students know they can run all over the teachers, Stream told VOA. Students need to know there will be consequences if they don't behave. Better ways than suspension are available to deal with misbehaving students. So says Daniel Lawson, director of the Center for Civil Rights Remedies at UCLA. There are many alternatives that teach good behavior and hold students accountable for their conduct while keeping them in school, he said. Russell Skiba is an education specialist and professor at Indiana University. He said more counselors for students and training teachers to deal with misbehaving students work better than suspensions from school. No one argues that we should be tolerating students who are disrupting classes, but I think it is the school's responsibility to make it clear to parents there are more effective methods, he said. Sean Harper directs the University of Pennsylvania's Center for the Study of Race and Equity. Harper said he found a successful alternative program at 40 small public high schools in New York City. The program uses student-led groups working with teachers and counselors to decide punishment for misbehaving students. Harper said the students are more likely to react positively when they are part of finding a solution. John King is the U.S. Secretary of Education. In June, he reported a nearly 20% reduction in school suspensions nationwide. Fewer suspensions is an important sign of progress, King said. But he said concern remains over continued higher suspension rates for African Americans. Recently, the labor union representing 200,000 New York City teachers objected to a plan to ban suspensions for young children. Under the plan, school officials would be barred from removing boys and girls in grades K, kindergarten, through grade 2. In a perfect world, no child under the age of 8 would ever be suspended, said union president Michael Mulgrew. But he said the proposed ban would hurt thousands of children who will lose education time because of disruptive students. Mulgrew said ending suspensions will only work when New York City officials agree to more counselors and better teacher training. In Texas, A member of the Dallas School Board also proposed a ban on suspensions for students from pre-kindergarten through second grade. Miguel Solis said his proposal would make suspensions the last alternative for students in grades 3 through 5. Some Dallas School Board members worry about doing anything to make it harder for teachers to teach and students to learn, reported the Dallas Morning News. The board decided to study the suspension issue before voting on the suspension ban proposal. Solis understands, "I think it best that we take a hard look at our own practices to see if they are adding to the problem," he told VOA. Solis worries about higher suspension rates for African Americans and higher school dropout and arrest rates for suspended students. I'm Bruce Alpert.
This is the Health and Lifestyle Report. When it comes to your health, it seems that sitting too much may be as bad for you as smoking. If you sit for many hours a day in a traditional office job, you may be interested in a new study. This study suggests that you should get an hour of brisk exercise every day. Many office workers spend a large part of their time seated and physically inactive. A lack of physical activity is linked to some 5.3 million deaths worldwide each year. The researchers say that makes a sedentary lifestyle more deadly than smoking. The new report said that a sedentary lifestyle can cause many diseases, including heart disease, diabetes, and even some cancers. These diseases cost the world economy $67.5 billion every year. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention suggests adults get 150 minutes of moderate aerobic exercise every week. In addition, CDC officials advise adults to get an additional 2 hours of muscle strengthening per week. Ulf Ekelund is with the Norwegian School of Sports Sciences and the University of Cambridge. He was the lead writer of the report. Ekelund says that for many people who commute to work and have office-based jobs, there is no way to escape sitting for prolonged periods of time. An hour of physical activity is ideal, he adds. But if this is not possible, he suggests doing at least some exercise each day to reduce the risk of disease and an early death. For the study, researchers looked at 13 earlier studies on the effect of inactivity. Study subjects were grouped according to the amount of activity they reported. The range of activity reported varied greatly, from less than 5 minutes a day to up to 75 minutes a day. The study found that those who sat for 8 hours a day but got the suggested amount of exercise reduced their chances of dying at an early age. These people did better than those who sat less but were not active. Ekelund says the message from his team is a positive one. It is possible to reduce or even eliminate these risks if we are active enough, even without taking up sports or going to the gym. A report on the study appeared in the publication Lancet. I'm Anna Mateo.
That's all the time we have today for Learning English on the Voice of America. Thanks for listening.